This is Rabbi Shai Held, Parashat Vayelech 5775, Why Joshua, or In Ambivalent Praise of Hesitancy. As the book of Deuteronomy draws to a close, the Israelites are at last ready to cross the Jordan. But their leader, Moses, cannot go with them. The crossing is dangerous enough. It is even more so without Moses, upon whom Israel has relied so heavily. Moses must make provision and give assurances for this journey he himself cannot take. He promises Israel that God will be their leader, quote, "The Lord your God will cross over before you, and he himself will wipe out those nations from your path, and you shall dispossess them. Be strong and resolute, be not in fear or dread of them, for the Lord your God himself marches with you. He will not fail you or forsake you." It is crucial to understand what happens here. Moses' first response to the people's anxiety over the imminent loss of their leader is not to appoint a successor, but to assure them that the primary pattern of the past will continue. God will be there with them and will deliver them. What underlies Moses' words is the realization that without the power of God at work, the question of a new human leader is moot. But for all that, God will not lead the people alone. The very same verse that declares that, quote, "The Lord your God himself will cross over before you," then adds that, quote, "Joshua is the one who will cross over before you." As Bible scholar Patrick Miller observes, Deuteronomy always affirms the interaction of divine and human activity in the accomplishment of God's purposes. God's leadership and guidance will therefore be through the agency of a new leader. Having assured the people of God's ongoing providential care, Moses now appoints Joshua to succeed him. Quote, "Then Moses called Joshua and said to him in the sight of all Israel, 'Be strong and resolute, for it is you who shall go with this people into the land that the Lord swore to their fathers to give them, and it is you who shall apportion it to them. And the Lord himself will go before you. He will be with you. He will not fail you or forsake you. Fear not and be not dismayed." Earlier, Moses had offered similar encouragement to his loyal servant in private. Here Moses repeats his charge in public, making his appointment known to all. Seeking to emphasize that the choice of Joshua is divinely authorized, God too appoints him. Quote, "And he charged Joshua the son of Nun, 'Be strong and resolute, for you shall bring the Israelites into the land that I promised them on oath, and I will be with you.'" In endorsing Moses' commission of Joshua, God appears in the tent of meeting in a pillar of cloud, the pillar of cloud having come to rest at the entrance of the tent. As Richard Nelson explains, the direct theophany removes any doubt over Joshua's authority. The Torah reiterates the commissioning of Joshua as Moses' successor again and again. Joshua's crucial role is thus given great emphasis by sheer repetition. All of this raises a simple question. Why Joshua? What is it about this man in particular that earns him the honor and the burden of leading Israel? When Moses sends spies to scout the land of Canaan, they return with a thoroughly discouraging report. The land, they admit, is rich and beautiful. Quote, "It does indeed flow with milk and honey." But they quickly add that, quote, "The people who inhabit the land are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large." Although the spies do not at first say so explicitly, it is clear that they are in favor of abandoning plans to conquer the land. Caleb, a minority of one, courageously demurs. Quote, "Caleb hushed the people before Moses and said, 'Let us by all means go up, and we shall gain possession of it, for we shall surely overcome it.'" Dismissing Caleb's words, the spies spread calumnies about the land. Dispirited, the people begin to weep and to rail fiercely against Moses and Aaron. They mutiny. Moses and Aaron, surprisingly, do not defend themselves. Instead, they, quote, "fall on their faces before all the assembled congregation of the Israelites." Stepping into the breach, quote, "Joshua son of Nun and Caleb son of Jephunneh, of those who had scouted the land, rend their clothes and exhort the whole Israelite community. 'The land is good,' they say, 'and if God so desires, God will give it to us. There is no reason to fear the inhabitants of the land, quote, for they are our prey. The Lord is with us.'" Note how the story begins. When the spies first begin to undermine Israel's confidence, it is Caleb and Caleb alone who stands against them. Only when the situation deteriorates further does Joshua stand with Caleb in opposition to the spies, and on some level, to the people as a whole. Like Caleb, Joshua now displays great bravery. But why does he remain silent when the negative report first emerges? Joshua's reticence does not go unnoticed. When God first condemns the whole unfaithful generation to die in the wilderness, God singles out Caleb as the sole exception. Quote, "But my servant Caleb, because he was imbued with a different spirit and remained loyal to me, him I will bring into the land that he entered, and his offspring shall hold it as a possession." Here, God makes no mention of Joshua. Oddly, however, just a few verses later, God speaks of Caleb and Joshua as a pair. Quote, "Not one of them shall enter the land in which I swore to settle you," God says, "save Caleb son of Jephunneh and Joshua son of Nun." When Moses later recounts the story of those horrible days, the same tension plays itself out. Moses reports on God's vow that no member of the sinful generation would see the land of promise. Quote, "None except Caleb son of Jephunneh. He shall see it, and to him and his descendants will I give the land on which he set foot, because he remained loyal to me." Moses says that God was angry at him too, because of the people's rebelliousness, and that therefore he too would be excluded from the land. In his place, God announces, quote, "Joshua son of Nun, who attends you, he shall enter it. Imbue him with strength, for he shall allot it to Israel." Caleb alone, it seems, merits seeing the land, yet it is Joshua who will lead the people into it. This anomalous passage brings our question into sharper focus. If Caleb is the one who stood valiantly on the side of God, why is he not appointed leader? And conversely, if Joshua hesitated, at first at least, why is he rather than Caleb designated Moses' heir? Traditional Jewish commentators subtly probe Joshua's reticence, which they connect to an odd passage about Joshua's name. Reporting on Moses' sending of the spies, the Torah relays all of their names, but then adds, strangely, that, quote, "Moses changed the name of Hoshea, son of Nun, to Joshua, Yehoshua." What is the meaning of this name change, and why does it happen, or in any event, why do we learn about it, at precisely this moment? A Talmudic sage explains that in changing Hoshea's name to Joshua, Yehoshua, Moses was praying on his behalf before the rebellion of the spies, quote, "May God save you, Yah Yoshiacha, from the designs of the spies." What is it about Joshua that made Moses worry? Targum Yonatan comments tantalizingly that, quote, "When Moses saw Joshua's humility, he called him Joshua," i.e., "May God save you." In the face of widespread sin and corruption, some righteous people are fearless and bold. Convinced of the justness of a cause, they unflinchingly take a stand, even if the whole world is against them. But others, the Hasidic master Rabbi Menachem Mendel of Rimanov observes, are so humble and self-effacing that they step aside when conflict arises. Moses worries that Joshua was diffident in just this way. Such timidity, the Rimanov Rebbe hints, can have disastrous consequences. We could perhaps add another dimension to this. Many leaders want desperately to be loved, and religious leaders are certainly no exception. To take a stand against the rest of the community, and to do so immediately, audaciously, unhesitatingly, is extraordinarily difficult. For many people, for many profoundly good people, the kind of unpopularity this would entail is simply an intolerable prospect. Perhaps Moses worries that Joshua is too reticent and unassuming to resist the plans of the other spies. Perhaps, too, he fears that Joshua does not want to be loathed, and so will hold his peace. Whatever the exact nature of Moses' worry, it proves prescient. In the first moment of truth, at least, while Caleb speaks, Joshua falls silent. So the question arises again, only more sharply. If Caleb is so heroic and stout-hearted, if, like Abraham, he is willing to stand on one side while the whole world stands on the other, why does God pass him over when it is time for a new leader? And if Joshua is, at times at least, halting and indecisive, why does God choose him to succeed Moses? In appointing Joshua rather than Caleb, God teaches us a powerful and enormously subtle lesson. Not every hero is meant to be a leader. There are moments in life when intrepidness can be a great boon, but there are also times when it can cause significant harm. In a leader utterly unafraid to go it alone, confidence can easily give way to overconfidence, and boldness to brashness. A leader utterly certain that he is right, even when everyone around him disagrees, can do great things, but he can also cause tremendous damage. In a time of acute crisis, the moment may call for a resolute, even brazen leader. But to lead the people over time, a leader characterized by at least a degree of hesitancy is to be preferred. As God's choice of Joshua indicates, sometimes a little bit of hesitancy can go a long way. Consider also the task placed before Joshua. He is to lead the people in conquering the land. Overconfidence is a danger in any leader, but it is all the more perilous in a military one. An abundantly self-assured leader may not flinch in the face of danger, which can, in different circumstances, be either a blessing or a curse. God's judgment, it seems, is that in the next stage of Israel's journey, with battles ahead, a degree of tentativeness may actually be a good and necessary thing. Remember, Joshua is not lacking in courage. At great personal danger, he does stand up against the will of the people. But the moment's hesitation he displays, so problematic in one context, may be invaluable in another. Shabbat Shalom.